Back Daddy Experience, DVR Podcast. What the fuck is going on? Obviously, a lot, and obviously, nothing all at the same time. As per usual, par for the course in the little experiment we call life. Of course, we don't know the control groups, we don't know any of that shit. We're just a part of the experiment. Toot-toot-oo. So, I'm talking about Steins Gate, and I'm just gonna dive right into whatever I'm gonna say, because that's how I fucking operate. And it's been a crazy, crazy, crazy week for me. It's left me mentally bleh. Anyway, so Okadine and the Future Gadget Laboratory conduct what they call the Lotto 6 experiment. And basically, how it works is they, meaning Okadine, picks the third winning number, meaning like there's, I guess it's like a succession of five, and one is the top bounty or the top amount that one can earn, and then the other, consequent numbers get lesser prizes as you go along. So to play it safe and not draw a lot of attention to them, he picks the third one, but ultimately, no one really cashes out. So basically, Okadine sends an email, which they call D-mails, to someone named Rukaku, and Rukaku gets the message. And subsequently, each time Okadine does this, it messes with the spatial temporal world line. But anyway, the experiment is a success. It works, but the only person unaffected by the events is Okadine, because the memories of everyone else have been altered because the world line shift when that message was sent. The world line shifted. So in that shift, when the world line shifts, the memories of those affected are altered. So that's how that works. And just by the way, thank you for putting up with my amateurish handling of my little web mic thing. I'll get better eventually. Hopefully. But anyway, so that Lotto 6 experiment, it works. And then Okadine gets notified by John Titor that he might have an ability, and the ability is to preserve and carry memories across world lines, which is not really something that should happen, because as each and everything is to be impacted in a world line, to have something that could traverse the world lines is interesting because it's not really something that's expected. So, that was a major development after the first four episodes. This is like covering between five and six now, or five through seven-ish. Sorry for the brain fart. That's what happens when you brain fart, at least to me. Going into episode 8, Okadine gets a request from Rukaku, which is very, it's a unique request. The request that Rukaku made was to send a message to Rukaku's mother to tell her to eat more vegetables, because when a woman is pregnant, if she eats more vegetables, the rumor, according to Rukaku, is that they'll have a girl. Now, Rukaku's a boy who very much looks like a girl already. And Rukaku wants to become a girl and thinks that if Okadine sends this message back in time, that he could become a girl. Okadine actually grants the wish, but initially he wasn't going to because Rukaku's mother didn't really have a cell phone then, but Okadine tells Rukaku if he can get his mother's pager number, because pagers were big in the 90s, then he would be able to hook it up. He would be able to send a short message to the pager saying, "Eat more vegetables for your baby," or something to that effect. And the thing is, whenever these D-mails are sent back in time, each message creates a new world line, and each world line has a ripple effect that I would say, and they say as well in the show, is akin to the butterfly effect. So, yeah. Then, for whatever reason, and I still don't know what happened to this freaking thing, the IBN 5100 goes missing. And there was a strange girl, I believe her name was Moke, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but she's always interested in the IBM 5100. It's a computer. Anyway, Okadine tries to get a friend of theirs named Faris to help, but that doesn't work out. However, Faris said that she wouldn't really try to help unless Okadine sent a D-mail for her. He doesn't know its contents, but he lets the message go through. And the thing is, Faris was the queen of Moe in Akihabara. And when he concedes to sending her message, what ends up happening is all the Moe places in Akiba, slash Akibara, I don't know. I think it's both. Those places vanish anyway. Those places just vanish. Like they were literally there and now they're not there. And the only person who's consistently remembering that, and only the person really remembering that, is Okadine. And due to the fact that Okadine's kind of crazy, he doesn't realize the import of that Rukaku message until he molested Rukaku and discovered that, holy shit, Rukaku became a girl. So that message to the mom literally changed the gender of Rukaku in the world line that they were currently inhabiting. I think that's kind of crazy. And then there's a girl that is known as the part-time warrior. She's downstairs with Mr. Braun, who rents out the future gadget laboratory to Okadine and his friends. And apparently, her backstory is that she's looking for her father, and she can't find him. And she's Suzuha, and she's a part of the time travel forum and all this other stuff, and she very much is actually a warrior, as I'll discuss in like some nanoseconds or whatever. Anyway, so so very sorry for that real world catastrophic interference. Now, let's pick up from where we left off. Bam. So anyway, the part-time warrior, she says that he might not see her again, meaning Okadine, because if her dad doesn't show up, it means something important. Basically, she said she would show up for the party because he said he'd set up a party for her if she found her dad. And she said something along the lines of, she wouldn't show up if she didn't find him. For whatever reason, this leads into a whole bunch of chaotic, crazy shit that kicks off with something Nocadian calls Operation Verdandi. And Verdandi is some kind of Norse mythological god, goddess. And it's symbolic of that which is happening or occurring in the present moment awareness or state of becoming. And basically, it relates to the current conditions of all forms, in that they are literally in a state of becoming and unbecoming, that everything is a series of beginnings and endings coinciding simultaneously, which is why you have this juxtaposition of these divergent world lines occurring. So Okadine wants to try to do a physical sending a person or object or thing through time. And his lab assistant Christina, aka Karisu Makise, whose specialty is in the brain sciences, she infers that while physically sending a person or object through time is not actually possible, you could send the electrical pulse signals of their current self to their past self somehow, making a time leap. So she devises a device which could send a person into their past self by several hours. And that would be kind of a leap in time. Anyway, so that becomes Operation Verdandi. In the interim, Suzua always seems to have beef with Christina and claims that she's a CERN spy. I inferred that the part-time warrior was from the future, but it hasn't been confirmed thus far up to this point in the show. And then you have that Moike girl, and she's always texting herself, and she always talks to people through texts, even if they're standing right in front of her. And this is where it gets kind of fucked up, because I'm kind of cutting things off, because Steins Gate tends to have this weird overarching experience, and when you're observing something that is literally presenting a series of becomings and unbecomings and beginnings and endings, and they're occurring almost simultaneously, that kind of juxtaposition done smoothly creates an even more disjointed effect in the viewer when they're immersed in this type of story. So the thing is that Okadine had decided that for Operation Verdandi that he He didn't want them to do the experiment until it went public. But the problem with it going public is that while they thought they had hacked into CERN's computer database situation, that creepy texting girl has a connection to CERN, and it doesn't go too well because, for whatever reason, again, Ocati is throwing another party, and during this party, that creepy girl breaks in and she murders Mayuri. Now, this is like a mega super spoiler, but it's necessary to discuss because it's a huge crux of the show. And I was really upset actually when that happened in the story. Like, I got really upset because Mayuri's kind of like a glue character. Like, everything about her integrates and overlaps everyone and connects everyone else to each other in a stronger way. And even though she doesn't demonstrate these kind of hyper interactive intellectual ideas, notions, she just seems to be very grounded in emotional intelligence, and that resonates more strongly because it bypasses logic and the intellect, and that's what's really interesting and important, I think. That you have characters and stories like that, that's what matters. And so, yeah, I was fucking really angry. I was not happy that this happened. And neither was Okadine, who's known Mayuri most of his life. So, he really goes in there. He really gets in there and he does the experiment on himself. He time leaps. And that poor motherfucker. So, he time leaps. And he has to repeatedly try to stop Mayuri from dying, and it just does not work. And almost every time before she bites the big one, no matter what the circumstances are, her stopwatch stops. And then shortly thereafter, she dies. So, poor, silly, goofy ass, fucked up Okadi goes from being so proud of his accomplishments and feeling like he's really getting somewhere to now basically having his soul literally destroyed in little tiny pieces because he has to watch the one person he truly deeply loves in the world die repeatedly because of his obsession with time travel. And it's frightening to think of actually having to literally go through that and to have that experience of all that pressure of, oh my God, I'm getting a chance to save this person, but I fail over and over and over again, which means you have to actually watch them die repeatedly. It's really intense. So, where the story goes from there, I mean, you pretty much you're in the grips of the story, and it's kind of like you want to know what's gonna happen. Like you really need to know because there's no other way for you to really get through the story without knowing what's gonna happen because it's really stressful. So, during one of the many attempts to stop Moriarty's death. Eventually, Okadine tells Christina about it because he has no other choice, and she tries to work with him on that and help him out. Eventually, he has a conversation with the part-time warrior, and she reveals a number of things. One of the things she reveals is that in his many attempts to save Mayuri, Okadine developed something that has the ability to read a divergence number which correlates to the world line. So it identifies the world line that you're currently in. She also reveals that there is a beta line for a divergence number correlating to the world line, and that there is an alpha and a beta world line, and only during major events is it possible to travel between the two lines. And she demonstrates the difference in the lines by throwing up two grappling ropes into a roof, and then she says they just look like they go straight up, but actually you have all these interconnecting threads, and there's so many of them, and it's not really just a straight line. So you look at the two ropes and they have all those intertwining threads, and a beta line would be the only way that they might be able to save Mayuri, is by going from the alpha line into the beta line. So doing that would be the way to save her, is that they would have to figure out how to travel between the two lines. And then the part-time warrior reveals something that for me was like probably the biggest revelation in the story, aside from the fact that Mayuri is currently dead. And that's the fact that she herself is John Titor, and she's from the year 2036, and she's looking for her father. So Steins Gate is pretty overwhelming. It might not sound as interesting when I'm describing what's happening, but that whole concept of a world line with an alpha and beta line, and the shifts made just by minute decisions, and the realization that each and every choice, each and every interaction, each and every thing in the world, every day, every choice is impactful and generates and leads to other choices and other experiences and other things, is a radical and very relatable and real thing. Things that you decided not to say could have changed and salvaged the relationship and also destroyed them. Things that you decided to do or not do. Something you could have said to someone, just a tiny phrase or word demonstrating in some capacity that yes, you actually give a shit. Or something you did that showed, no, I really don't give a shit. All of these things seem to be very impactful, and it's just, if you've had enough life experiences and if you've had enough good and bad, and you understand that sometimes you're gonna consciously do something and sometimes you're not, but ultimately it's just that capacity to impact this experience that we call reality. Very subjectively so. You realize how often you don't see what's right in front of you, how elusive the obvious is, and how even the tiniest decisions in the world have an impact that are far beyond your comprehension and have an import that is far beyond your grasp. So that's the draw for me for Steins Gate. I think it gets very intense, and the next cast will be all about closing out discussing Steins Gate, but I think conceptually it's a very intense and interesting story, and it lends itself to great reflection on life and choices and decisions made, and how we take for granted the most minute things, and how we might over-exaggerate some of our misery in relation to the misery of others, and how we might negate just doing something small for someone because we don't think it'll matter, but it's that paradox. Everything matters and nothing matters at the same time. All the time. Ad nauseum, ad infinitum, forever and ever. So, I'm just looking forward now to getting to the finish line of the story, because, you know, I left off at a very, very tense section. So, next cast, I'll be closing out Steins Gate, and I have no idea what else I'll be starting, but I appreciate everyone for listening, who listens, whether it's 3 or 3,000. You're observing me, I'm observing you, in some obtuse fashion, and we make each other exist. Hooray! Alright. Peace out, mofos. Till next time.